Good morning. Welcome to Radio Economica this Thursday morning. We are very honored and very pleased to have with us Mr. Wojciech Postulski from DG Justice. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the invitation and having me and the judicial training as a topic here today.
Thank you for coming to Rue de Genève. We are very interested in listening to what you have until recently done and what you are also continuing to do today and within the Commission, since you have been a Secretary General to the European Judicial Training Network for 6 years until very recently. And now, of course, your mission has changed, but you are very, very competent still to tell us exactly what this network is about.
Yes, indeed. I left EJTN last December after even more than 6 years in total with EJTN. But coming to the network, I think there's one word that is the best to describe who EJTN is, how it operates, and why is it so unique. And this word is a network. Because EJTN is a network of all public entities that are training judges and prosecutors in all EU member states. So there are in total 35 such institutions in all 27 EU member states. As you see, in some members, more than one. And EJTN is bringing them all together. It's networking them to deliver jointly the training activities for the judges. And so this is the second feature, how it operates. Building on the expertise coming from all those institutions, from different legal cultures, different legal systems, is trying to deliver training activities, exchanges to address judges and prosecutors and to help to build among them this European judicial culture. And thirdly, uniqueness, because it's the only entity networking all those training providers at the national level. So I think this is the shortest way to explain what EJTN is. Of course, we can also define it by what it is not. It's not part of the European institutions. Throughout 20 years of the history of EJTN, there were several discussions if EJTN should become the EU agency. The answer was always no.
Why? So,
the EJTN is keeping the status of international association based in Belgium under the Belgian law. And that is seen as a reflection of the principle of independence of the judiciary. We, the judges, I'm a judge myself, we believe that judges should be trained by judges. It's, of course, a simplification of the concept, but the judicial training should be supervised, delivered, monitored by the judiciary to avoid any influences on the content of the training. Because the training is the only time and only place where the judge can be told what and how to do. Otherwise, we should not get any instructions from anywhere, from anyone. That's why this training is such a sensitive area. And so that was the main reason why most EU member states were opposing any proposals of turning EJTN into the agency. Which doesn't mean that EJTN is not close to European institutions. I'm now working from the European Commission, and EJTN is one of our key partners in the area of judicial training. EJTN is co-financed from the Justice Programme by European Commission. Most of its budget is coming from the European Commission. We see EJTN as the most important entity implementing European policy, European Commission strategy on the training of the judiciary. So the links obviously exist. And EJTN is very much recognized by the European institutions. We had several recommendations from the Parliament, European Council, in its conclusions was naming EJTN as the best place to deliver EU-level training and to coordinate the national-level training. And of course, we, the Commission, are the partner for EJTN.
Of course, I'm aware that, I think what we have as well is the need at European level of having a seamless judicial area across the EU, because we are unity, unit, also legal one. And this means networking, this means connecting and finding a common process or dynamic to get together. I'm interested to know when this network was created and what is its position in terms of share in the general budget of DG Justice at a time when, you know, money is scarce and hard to get.
Especially today, where the council is discussing the MFF. The JTN is celebrating this year its 20th anniversary. So it was year 2000, where some member states decided to launch this initiative. There was a meeting in Bordeaux in France, which is the seat of the French judicial school, where directors of several schools decided we need to do something together. We have to learn from each other. We have to improve what we do at the national level by learning from each other. And we have to deliver training activities at EU level. So it's 20 years of history, which led the JTN to its current status. So the number one provider of judicial training, despite being a network, it is a provider of judicial training, which is reflected with the budget.
But not aligned with MFF. Is this part of the independence of the profession? I'm teasing.
At every level, budget of the judiciary comes from the state. So there must be a body of the executive or the parliament at the national level deciding how much money will be devoted to the judiciary, to the courts, to the prosecution. And I think it's the same at the European level. So MFF, of course, is decisive to how much money are given to the justice program. And then within the justice program, the priorities must be set and decision taken how much will be devoted to the judicial training. Looking at the past, at the MFF coming to an end and the justice program that is ending this year, the budget of justice program was 378 million euros for those last 7 years.
And so that's 100 million every year, more or less. Am I right? Or
Already the Romans were saying that iuris non calculia, so I can't help you much with the calculations, but it's nearly 400 for 7 years. So it's a bit more than 50-60. A year. And out of this global number of 378 millions, more than 35% was devoted to the judicial training over those years. So judicial training was taking a bit more than one third of overall budget of the justice program. Of course, when we look into the future, everyone is expecting that the justice program will be cut. So the next justice program will see the decrease. It is being said that the decrease will be by more or less 15%. So might lead with the amount around 310, 320 million euros. We'll see. Of course, the key is the decision of next MFF, and then the sector areas will follow. But it will not change the fact that the judicial training will remain a priority within the founding of justice program.
Yes, you would say that building a common culture, cooperating is highly needed and very topical, remains very topical. And I understand we all know the profession in a way is under pressure in several countries across the EU. But there was an evaluation done, a needs analysis, I think, being conducted in last October with some consequences drawn for the next strategy for judicial training. Could you tell us a little bit more about this?
Indeed, the justice program is mirrored with the European Commission strategy on European judicial training. And the current one was published in 2011. It's coming to an end this year. And last year, the Commission published the staff working document on the evaluation of the last strategy, analyzing which objectives were achieved, what should be the way forward. Shall we just continue, or do we have to set new objectives, new goals? are the new needs for the judicial training. And indeed, that evaluation allowed to draw a very clear direction where the development of the next strategy should go. And this direction are a concern who, so who should be addressed with the European level judicial training. What should be the content of the training activities? And thirdly, how to deliver them. So what should be the modalities in the training methods for the judiciary? And we are now in the process of working on the ambitious policy paper setting such a strategy for the future.
When can we expect to have it?
We hope to have it published mid this year, but I cannot say too much. We are still awaiting decisions of the key decision makers in the Commission. So we are waiting for that. We are prepared to design and propose such a text, and we hope that mid this year it will be out and published. And what will it say?
Will it be translated into all officials in official languages?
As we expect that it will be implemented at the national level, it must be read by everyone at the national level. So of course it will be available in all languages. And it will be saying that we need to broaden the audience. Of course, till now, the justice program was focusing on many professions, but judges and prosecutors, the judiciary, were the key addresses of the training activities. We see we have to go beyond. There are two professional groups that require special attention. It's a court staff, it's lawyers. Court staff, obviously, judges are dependent on their efficiency as well. Judge will never be efficient without a good legal clerk next to him, for example.
Greffier, you know.
In the French system. Yeah. Lawyers, it's up to them to bring the EU law up front of the courts. In many member states, it's the lawyer who is decisive to put the spotlight on such aspects of the case that make the EU law a natural substance of the judge's decision making. And other professions as well. Notaries, probation officers, prison staff, mediators, legal interpreters. They all will be looked at, and their training needs will be looked at in the upcoming strategy. So that will be the first direction, so the new addresses. Secondly, the content. Judicial training should...
Can I interrupt you? I'm sorry. Will you take into account a directive that we cherish a lot since 2010, which is a directive 2010-64 on the right to interpretation and translation in criminal proceedings? Will that be part of... Because it's a very substantial directive, I suppose it will be taken on board.
Of course, but the approach will be even broader than that. The interpretation is important in the courtroom in every kind of the case, not only in the criminal cases. Of course, people accused have to have the access to the interpretation to be able to have their rights protected, also in the situation where they are in the country, which language they don't speak. But we have such needs in family cases, in civil cases. Everywhere, the efficiency of handling the case depends on what's happening in the courtroom. And very often what's happening there must be interpreted. So all the parties, judges and the very interpreters, they have to be aware how they contribute to the effective service of justice by providing the interpretation services and using those services. So that will be the important element. It is important element of the service of justice. It will be also touched by the next strategy. And close to that are the languages. That brings us to the next point. What should be the substance of the training? Training of the judiciary is not training on law, or not only training on law. Depends whom you ask. It's clear that it must be much more than the legal training. We have to focus on the transdisciplinary issues, on the skills of those in the legal professions, so-called judgecraft, and of course the languages. We have to make sure that all practitioners are able to communicate one with another between member states if we want to have the cross-border proceedings being efficient and effective. And languages is also crucial for us to understand other legal cultures, other countries' judicial systems, from which we should learn, which we have to understand, to have the trust towards them, to build this mutual trust within you.
I had a very good quote from the famous philosopher that I wanted to put to you, because the famous philosopher said, language is about cultural differences, and it reminds us of our cultural differences, but also it is about the need to unite. I'm taking you to a different field now, but for 1 minute. Would you agree with this famous philosopher?
Of course, I believe that's why long, long ago we've developed languages to be able to communicate with those that were close to us, to unite with those that were the closest. And now, of course, as the world is getting smaller, we need to get closer and closer to the people that are more far away from us, speaking different languages. So we want to say the same. We want to communicate the same feelings, the same content of our life, just we are forced to use different languages. But our communication in substance is, in general, about the same. And I would come back to the law with that, because I think it's the same with within the legal systems. They are so different, but they have to talk to each other. And at the end, they serve the same purpose, to have the citizens' rights protected, to have the justice being served. So no matter how different they are, they serve the same purpose. No matter how different languages we use, they serve the same purpose, to communicate. So that's why we have to use them to overpass the borders between our languages, our legal systems, ourselves, people.
And making sure that European citizens' rights are fully respected. Okay, I'm very happy for the philosopher. I think he would agree with you as well. But you had more to tell us, because you mentioned strange concepts. You say law is not perhaps the key element, because these judges and others have a legal training. In any case, it's part of their profession from the very beginning. But you mentioned languages, and you also mentioned something which I don't exactly know what it means. What is judgecraft?
Judgecraft is a term that is very popular in the recent years in the judicial training. It's about the craft of judging. Some are saying it's about the art of judging. Judging is not only knowing the law. Judging is also the ability to apply it in the concrete social human context. It's also about the ability to behave properly towards the parties, to communicate with the parties in a proper manner. It's judging is about managing my case, my courtroom, my court, if I'm a president. So the competences expected from judges are going much beyond the knowledge of law. And this is judgecraft. Judgecraft is a subject trained by EJTN for quite many years. The EJTN training activities focus on the issues like judicial conduct, ethics, our biases, that we have, resilience of the judges, all those skills needed in the courtroom. EJTN is developing many training activities on that, based on the experience of colleagues from UK who developed this concept and this kind of the trainings years ago. And we in continental Europe were very much benefiting from the experience of British colleagues when developing the concept of judgecraft and judgecraft training. In short, I will say that the judgecraft training is bringing us back to the not remembered by everyone Bangalore principles of judicial conduct, adopted in the year 2002 under UN auspices, which identified the six core values of the judiciary, which are independence, impartiality, integrity, propriety, equality, and competence and diligence. This is what we judges should represent by ourselves, and it's all trainable. We are not born with it. We are not enlightened by the act of appointment for the position of a judge. We have to develop all those qualities within ourselves by training as well.
So isn't that sort of challenge when you deal with training and you suggest or tell judges, professionals with a lot of experience in some cases, that they need to train? I mean, this is not self-evident. I suspect if you address an 18-year-old, okay, it would be fairly easy, depending on the cases. But when it comes to a solid professional who's been dealing with pressures of all kinds, how do you manage that as an organizer of training?
Indeed, it's a challenge. But when facing it, the starting point is to say that you are never too senior. You are never too wise. You are never too old to be trained. Everything that is around the courts, around the justice systems, is changing continuously. So the judges need to keep up the pace of the changing society. And even that should make them being aware that they have to develop. They have to learn to be able to keep up that pace. Law is changing constantly. There were some surveys run showing that within the 10 years, 30% of the law is outdated. It means 30% of the legal knowledge of a judge is outdated. So she needs to keep up with all those changes, new laws, new jurisprudence. And this is what we base on. It's true. Not everyone is fully aware of that. Sometimes in some countries, in some legal systems, we have a problem to convince more senior judges to be trained. But of course, judicial training involves very many different training methods. They must be adapted towards our target audience. Ex-cathedra lecture is not a method anymore. We have to have the methods that are involving the participants, those who are to be trained in the discussions, in the brainstorming, in finding the solutions, analyzing the situations. And having such approach to the learning methodology makes it easier to approach those that are more senior. And of course, the challenge must be answered in a very practical manner. Let me give you some examples of what EJTN used to do to convert, if I may use this word, senior judiciary or the leaders in justice to those believing in judicial training. The simplest solution was to organize the training activities dedicated for them. So EJTN implements the exchanges for the presidents of courts. So the president of court A, let's say in Germany, is going for a week to see how his colleague is managing his court in France. Learning new things, observing the new approaches to the same tasks. And this way, we hope that this president will see the benefits of the cross-border training experience and will encourage his judges from his court to take part in other training activities. EJTN used to focus, European Commission sees as a priority, the leadership training for the members of the judiciary.
Do you manage stress management courses? Because we all know judges are pretty overworked and overloaded. I mean, most courts in the EU, I don't know elsewhere, there's not much staff. There's lots of cases, more and more. So
yes, the demands towards the judiciary keep increasing, and judges might have a problem in facing those changing and increasing demands, workload, etc. Burnout is happening among the judiciary as well. So indeed, training is also the tool to help the judge to handle the stress. I've mentioned the resilience that is part of the judgecraft training. We have to learn how to face the constant pressure from media, from general public, and not to be overstressed because we read something about the case that we are just to handle in our courtroom. And of course, judicial training is coming as a support to the judiciary with being able to cope with these challenges.
And do you think the environment, you mentioned changes in society, you just mentioned the media, do you see this trend a little bit everywhere? We know that just just as there are changes that are very much discussed and very controversial across the EU. And I mean, what about this environment for the profession in particular?
I don't see anything bad in the fact that the media are looking closely at the judiciary, are looking closely at what we do and how we do. We, the judiciary, should not close ourselves in some bubble detached from the reality of the society towards whom the judiciary is to serve. So such a daily contact of the media with the judiciary, media reporting what's happening in the courts, courts looking at the media, what the society expects from them, it's a very desired exchange and a very desired process. But of course, leading to many extreme situations where there's extreme critics towards the judiciary.
Leaks during the investigation?
Sometimes we don't even say about the leaks. I remember a few years ago, there was a situation discussed very much in UK, again, we are in that country, where there was a judge who was weekly guest in the TV show, where he was commenting the cases he was hearing. So it's much more than the leak. But of course, the judiciary cannot ignore the media, but the judiciary have to learn how to work with media and as well how to use media to make the society understand what is the role of the judiciary, what are the purposes of working this way or another.
Not simple. Not just for the judges, but generally speaking. Yes.
This is a big chapter of the training offer in most of the judicial schools, how to deal with the journalist, how to present their cases, how to talk to the press.
How to remain impartial, and despite the pressure in general. So more publicity, more pressure, so more difficulties in controlling the relationship with the media, of course.
But in short, more communication in a proper way.
Okay. Not simple. Now, you have been a judge, as you said, and you have a long professional experience in different positions at national level, in a European network, which is just the one we're discussing, and now working at in the European Commission. How would you define this broad range of experience, and what change do you see coming to Brussels? Not that you have not been in Brussels before, but in that particular position, working in the European Commission.
Yes, indeed, in my professional path of life, I had this pleasure to look at the judiciary or work within the judiciary in different capacities and look at it from different angles. So I've started as a judge. For some years I was training other judges, colleagues, judges. Then I joined the Polish Judicial School, where I was organizing the training. Then I joined the JTN, where I was responsible for the EU level training. And now I'm with the policy setter, with the Commission. So indeed, it helps to see the bigger picture of the judiciary, of the challenge of the proper judicial training. And it's not easy to draw one conclusion from all observing judiciary from all those perspectives. But if you ask me for the one, I think that it's the following. I see that the national level of the judiciary should be more and more European. Judges, prosecutors, all legal practitioners at the national level have to think more and more that they are European judges, prosecutors, lawyers as well. They have to remember that they are not there only to apply the national law, but European law as well. That they have to cater for European values as well. So more of Europe at the national level and vice versa. At the EU level, we need to be closer and closer to the reality, to the grassroots level of the judiciary, of the member states. We have to be aware about their challenges, about developments that are happening in member states when drafting EU law, when designing European policies. So if from both those levels, European and national, we'll be getting closer to each other, we'll be building the real Europe.
and yes, and a full European judicial area. Now, I think we have about exhausted the time, unless you have a last important message to give. I have, of course, in mind a picture of the lady carrying the balance. So it's a tricky science. You mentioned it as a craft. It's also a science, but a sense of balance. European law, of course, is very much at the forefront at the moment. Thank you very much for this testimony. I'm telling my colleagues, expect something to come from DG Justice, in particular in this area. Hopefully not in July, but a bit before that.
Mid this year, yes, something will be out. Thank you very much again for having this topic, this very important topic of judicial training. So bringing the practical aspect to all our work in DG Just to the attention of your colleagues.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.